We got a Tales of the Umpire trailer that we'll talk about, as well as our regular reviews of The Bad Batch and X-Men 97, both of which had a lot of similarities. This is Geekville Radio number 355, and it starts right now.
Geekville Radio.
Hello once again, citizens of Geekville, ladies and gentlemen, geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio, coming at you with another episode. This is episode number 355 in your hymnals. You can find the show notes at geekvilleradio.com/355. The first part here, we're going to talk the Tales of the Empire trailer that hit this past week. We're doing things a little bit differently because, since this is Geekville Radio, not a Geekville video, I'm not really going to talk about specific screenshots or anything like that, because you can't see them. So I'm just going to talk about the trailer in general, and we'll see how it goes. Let me know what you think. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com, Twitter/X, or on Facebook or Instagram at geekvilleradio. If you want more screen caps and such, I'm certainly willing to do those, but we're doing this in a oral-only type format. But this is a sequel of sorts, you might say, to the Tales of the Jedi miniseries that we got last year, which I really liked. This is focusing more on the bad guys. I mean, we got bad guys in Tales of the Jedi because we saw Count Dooku's corruption, which was probably the highlight of it for me. I liked the Ahsoka origin that we got, but it was really cool seeing the younger Dooku with Qui-Gon as his Padawan, and that is the stuff that I look for most in Star Wars canon. Is I really like that period when Dooku had a young Qui-Gon, because we know how differently Qui-Gon was. I've said before, had Qui-Gon lived, things would have been very different in Star Wars history, and I believe that Dooku might not have gotten corrupted had Qui-Gon not been killed. But anyway, that's a little sidetrack. We are also seeing a corruption and fall to the dark side in this series as well, only this is Barriss Offee, who we mainly saw in Clone Wars. She was a recurring character. For those who may not remember or may not have seen much of Clone Wars, Barriss Offee was another Padawan. She was a friend of Ahsoka, about the same age, under the tutelage of Luminara Unduli, and we saw her develop through the course of a few Clone Wars seasons. Like I said, she was friends with Ahsoka, but she wound up framing Ahsoka for the destruction of a Jedi temple and making it look like Ahsoka did it. And this pissed off Ahsoka to the point that it's ultimately what led to her walking out of the Jedi Order, because the Jedi did not stand with her. They did not stand beside her. They were suspecting her, and then when her innocence was proven, they basically said, oh, this was your final test. Oh, yeah, see, you made it through. Oh. And she was like, screw you guys, I'm going home, and just walked out in the Jedi Order, which, of course, Anakin himself would do. A couple years later, he just burns the whole damn thing to the ground on his way out. But Ahsoka walked out on it as well. I think it was season 5. Actually, I think it might have even been the final episode of the original Clone Wars, because there were 5 seasons of Clone Wars on Cartoon Network, and then Clone Wars was put on hold and then ceased production a little bit later because of the Disney buyout. It really was one of the short-term bad things that happened with the Disney takeover, as we lost Clone Wars, and we were supposed to get a whole bunch of more seasons. We got 2 abbreviated seasons. One of them was on Netflix, and then I think one of them was on Disney Plus, that final season. But there are other stories, like what happened with Darth Maul, because when we last saw him, he was being brutally tortured by Sidious. And then all of a sudden, in season 7, he's, you know, good as new. Now we'll sadly probably never see those stories in animated form, but I guess it's better to have them in comics and novels than to not have them. I'm getting off another tangent. I think it's tangent number 3 I've just gone on. But we do know this is going to cover several years, just like Tales of the Jedi did. The other character we're going to look at is a young Morgan Elsbeth, because she started the trailer talking with Thrawn, and this has looked like it's sometime during the Clone Wars, maybe even shortly after. Because if you cheat a little bit and look at the captions on YouTube, you'll see that Thrawn is credited as Admiral Thrawn, not Grand Admiral Thrawn. Or if you don't cheat and just look at the rank on his chest, he does not have that Imperial Sector High Command ranking, because only a small handful of people had that Imperial High Command ranking. It was him, Grand Moff Tarkin. I think Admiral Dalla had it in some of the Kevin J. Anderson books. But very few people had that ranking. But we do know that Morgan was a Night Sister on Dathomir. And we know that they were wiped out by Separatists during the events of the Clone Wars. I think that may have also been Season 5. May have been Season 4. I think it was one of the stories that was written, or at least co-written, by one of George Lucas's daughters. And I think it was one of the first times we saw zombies in Star Wars as well. But I don't think Morgan ever knew that the Separatists were also under the control of Darth Sidious and that Palpatine was working both sides. So she probably sees the Empire as being the good guys in this story. Swears loyalty to Thrawn and to the Empire to get revenge for Dathomir being wiped out. And after the war, that eventually leads her to the place as a magistrate on that planet Corvus, where we saw her in the second season of The Mandalorian. It was also the same episode where we first saw Ahsoka in live action. Now, Dathomir was mentioned during the Ahsoka series, and it was shown being wiped out, like I said, in the Clone Wars series. I think it was introduced in the legacy novel Courtship of Princess Leia, but we never really saw much of their origin. The Night Sisters, we didn't really hear much about them before or after that. I guess you could say we saw the what you'd call the OG Night Sisters in the Ahsoka series, because when the villains made their trip to the far universe and found Thrawn, and we got them being led by the great Claudia Black, which was wonderful. I thought it was great that Claudia Black finally got a role in Star Wars, though they somehow did the unthinkable and managed to make Claudia Black look ugly in that series, but that's beside the point, and I'm on like tangent 5 or 6 now. But for those of you who are not maybe familiar with the Night Sisters, they were Force users. I don't think they were really evil. I wouldn't really necessarily call them dark side. They just had their own way of looking at things. They were kind of like a true neutral or maybe a chaotic neutral, because they mixed the Force with magic. And they're responsible for bringing back Darth Maul from being a half-mechanical spider with rambling thoughts to having more regular metal legs and being much more focused. They helped his brother, Savage Opress. They beefed up his powers. But in the end, Palpatine saw them as a threat. And as we said a few times, they got wiped out in the latter seasons of Clone Wars. And we do see clips of battle droids wreaking havoc. We see clips of young Morgan battling General Grievous. I'm assuming this is all taking place during that wipeout, just probably different scenes of it. But it looks like that's what we're going to get. This is the origin of Morgan Elsbeth, her going from a Night Sister Dathomir to an ally to the Empire, swearing loyalty to Thrawn, and probably what sets her up wanting to find Thrawn after his disappearance shortly before the Battle of Yavin. Now, we mentioned Barriss Offee before. We talked about her past in Clone Wars. In this trailer, we do see her meeting the Grand Inquisitor, so it looks like she will be on her way to becoming an Inquisitor in her own right, one of the sisters, not to be confused with the Night Sisters, a lot of sisters in these stories here, but it looks like she clashes with the Grand Inquisitor, and you can tell he's toying with her just in those couple frames we see. She's getting busted up a bit, but he's toying with her very much the way Vader would toy with Luke early on in their fight in Empire Strikes Back, just mocking her. And I think eventually he'll teach her how to use her anger as a weapon, because that's what dark side users do. And she'll probably become a much more fierce warrior and hunter. It'll be interesting to see if she crosses paths with Ahsoka at some point in here. I don't know if we'll see the character that Michael Biehn played. That would be cool. Maybe we could get him in a voice role, because Morgan was also on Corvus. The main thing that we see on Corvus is there's people clearly coming to her for help, and these are probably people that had roots in being Separatists, because she slaughters them, burns their ships to the ground, kind of the slow motion walking away from the burning background that we get in all the movies these days. And around that time in the trailer, we do see Barriss with the cool Inquisitor spinning lightsaber thingy. You know, the spinning lightsaber that she uses like a private helicopter, like she's the Penguin in Batman or something, or Lex Luthor in some of those pre-Crisis Superman comics. And we do get the final shot where it looks like Barriss is a full-fledged Inquisitor, one of the sisters. She's on her knees kneeling as Darth Vader walks into the room. That's the last shot of the trailer, definitely showing that Vader is her new master of sorts. Not in a master-apprentice sort of way, but just how it is with the other Inquisitors. Now, with Inquisitors, these are not full-blown Sith. They do not fight in the way that Sith do. Many of them are just Jedi who joined the Empire, renounced the Jedi Order, pledged allegiance to the Empire. I think there's a total of 7 of them, and most of them got wiped out during Rebels, which takes place after the Obi-Wan series. I don't know how much of that we'll see here, but I think we'll get a good look into maybe more how the Inquisitors work and how they do things. We do get a little bit less than a month of wait for this. It's going to come out on May the 4th, as in May the 4th be with you, the unofficial, official Star Wars day, you might say. I hope this is as much fun as Tales of the Jedi was. We're still getting that Clone Wars animation style, so maybe it'll be a supplemental story to Clone Wars as well. I'd like to see some of these other stories that maybe we didn't get in Clone Wars done up in a Clone Wars style animation, because they did say season 7 was the final season, but maybe we could do like a Tales of the Republic, Tales of the Confederacy, Tales of the Clones, stuff like that, Tales of the Rebellion. Maybe we might see some of these stories that were relegated to comics and novels after all. I'd be all for it if it happens, but we'll wrap up this review portion. Like I said, debuts on May the 4th. We'll be covering the episodes then. This is Geekville Radio, and when we come back, we are going to dive into our obligatory reviews of The Bad Batch and X-Men 97. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back.
Attention all Time Lords and Ladies. This message is being sent by Lady President Romana and the High Council of Gallifrey. Geekville Radio presents Examining the Doctor. Join Mark and Seth as they bring their signature blend of knowledge and humor about everybody's favorite Time Lord, the Doctor. From Hartnell to Whitaker, Examining the Doctor provides episode commentaries for favorite and not-so-favorite Doctor Who stories. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, GeekvilleRadio.com, or wherever podcasts can be found.
All right, we are back. We are going to dive into The Bad Batch, continuing our Star Wars love here. Now, these episodes covered a lot of ground. Each episode was a polar opposite. We got 2 episodes instead of just 1. Episode 10 focused on the villain's plans, while episode 11 really had the heroes on the run for a bit, had them on the defense. So we'll start with episode 10, Identity Crisis. It had very little action, but a lot of plot development, whereas 11 was filled with a lot of action, not so much plot development. But with episode 10, Dr. Carr learned the truth that the experiments were actually being done on children, and she is now morally conflicted with what to do, because it seems like she believed in what the Empire was doing. She believed that they were doing a good thing, and now she has her doubts. She clearly spurred some of the children the wrong way because they accused her of lying and covering up things and such, and she winds up giving one of the children one of the dolls that Omega had made during her stay. And I think it is one of the things that's kind of funny, because they keep talking to Omega like she's a child, but yet she's supposed to be older than the Bad Batch are, and they're grizzled veterans, but yet Omega seems to have a lot of the childhood innocence, like somebody still in their childhood would have. But regarding this new revelation and how Dr. Carr is thinking about things, I think this may lend credence to the theory that Dr. Carr is actually the mother of Dr. Pershing, who we saw in The Mandalorian. He was fleshed out a little bit more in Season 3. Dr. Pershing mentioned that the cloning technology could have saved his mother's life because they were researching cloning organs to replace failing organs, which, quite frankly, I think is something that will happen in real life. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert on cloning. I can't really tell you what's going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if we get something similar to that happening in the next decade or two. Don't quote me on that, because I'm probably wrong. But anyway, we do know that Cad Bane had been procuring some of these Force-sensitive children. We know he has experience dealing with Force users and even clashed with some of them. I think he even fought Obi-Wan himself. And that does make me wonder, where does Ventress stand in this whole thing? We know Ventress knows it's happening, because she talked about it last week with Bad Batch themselves. She tried doing some training with Omega. Could we see Ventress clash with Cad Bane over this? It would not be the first time Bane's had to do with Force users, like we said. But the big takeaway for me for this episode is how long before we see Ventress and Bane in the same place, the same time over this. Could Ventress have even captured a child for the Empire? Because if she could, she might have tried capturing Omega herself, but she didn't. So that makes me think that she's not on the side of the Empire with this. She is more on the side of Dr. Carr. This is probably very wrong. Like I said, there really wasn't much action here, but and the story can be summarized in a sentence or two, but it does add weight to the overall story. Like I said, now that Dr. Carr knows what the experiments are about, she's conflicted with what to do, and I think she is going to be one of the keys to unraveling this plot, and ultimately one of the reasons why this plot fails. We're probably going to see Dr. Hemlock go down with Mount Tantus when it's destroyed, probably a lot of the clones as well, because it's one of the tropes that's as old as storytelling itself. The mad scientist dies at the hands of his own creation. And I think it's ultimately what puts the cloning of Palpatine on hold for decades so we can finally get the reason for somehow Palpatine returned before the time of the sequel trilogy. So that said, we'll move on to episode 11, Point of No Return. This is, I think, what is sending us into the final act of this season. We're probably going to get things switching into high gear here, coming into the home stretch, because the major point is Omega turned herself into the Empire. We saw that she went in. I don't think she had any way to identify where she was going because the Empire was smart enough to check for tracking devices. Wrecker is severely injured after the destruction of the Marauders, so the Bad Batch don't even have their own ship anymore. And we last saw Hunter kind of abandoned in the water. And he's probably going to be fine. He's probably going to have to catch up with Crosshair and then catch up with Wrecker. But that leads us to the major questions here. How long do the team have to locate Mount Tantus? How will they get there? They don't have their own ship. How will they even find it? How will they find where Mount Tantus is, even if they find the right planet? Obviously, Cad Bane probably knows where it is. Maybe Ventress knows where it is. Maybe they could get more information from Fennec Shand. And how long before Dr. Hemlock suspects Dr. Carr of treason? And will Omega meet any of these children as test subjects? Because now she's effectively marooned with the Empire. But the heroes have no way getting to Mount Tantus. And so there's the story of how they get there. And then the other prong, kind of this two-pronged finale, along with getting there and the destruction of Mount Tantus, is I think we're going to get another clone uprising. Or not another, but a clone uprising. I think that the Bad Batch and Omega are going to inspire, and maybe Dr. Hemlock too, we could see them inspire a clone revolt. And the evil mad scientist, like I just said, going down with his ship, winds up being destroyed by his own creation. That's horror 101, sci-fi 101, storytelling 101, you might say. And after all it's done, after all that's over with, the Empire will disavow any knowledge that this ever existed, and it'll go on for the next several years, and with the Empire falling apart, and we'll settle into the dark times, the time of the Empire. Not really else much to review on this, other than there was a lot of action. I mean, I could cover more of the action, but it wouldn't be nearly as much fun as just watching the episode again. So if you haven't seen this episode, I know I just spoiled everything, but go watch it. It's a great episode. Come back next week. We'll be doing episode 12. And when we come back, we are going to dive into episode 4 of X-Men 97. Really funky name for this episode because it's actually two stories. We had Motendo and Life Death Part 1. We're diving into X-Men 97 when we come back, so don't go anywhere.
Coming soon to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and your favorite podcasting devices around the world. Hello, this is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville, and the host of Geekville Radio, and I'm happy to announce the latest addition to the Geekville Radio podcast channels. We do have Geekville Radio, which covers all aspects of geekery, TVs, movies, superheroes, science fiction, you name it. We have Examining the Doctor, which is our Doctor Who-themed podcast, and we have Examining the Dead, which is our horror-themed podcast. Well, the latest addition to those Geekville Radio channels is called the Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame. And I know some people may say that Lesser Known and Hall of Fame may be an oxymoron, and that is, you know, quite frankly true. But here at Geekville Radio, we like to pay tribute to some of the lesser known characters out there. We're not going to talk much about Superman or Spider-Man or Wonder Woman or any of the other A-listers. We're going to talk about characters that might not be the first names that roll off your tongue when it comes to characters, both heroes and villains, but characters who the story of heroes and villains might not be complete without. And fortunately, I don't have to do it alone. Joining me on this journey, and we will have other guests along the way, my usual co-host for Geekville Radio, from a South Padded Cell in South Kakalaki, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullitt.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, we're going to go back in the annals of history and pull out some of those lesser-known geek heroes and villains. Some of the people you might not have heard of or only know a little bit about, some that are near and dear to our heart, and some that we don't know that much, so we're going to enjoy just doing the research ourselves. Dropping soon, we're going to start with our inaugural podcast on one of my all-time favorite characters, The Shadow. That's the kind of things you'll be looking at on the Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame.
Once again, that is the Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame, the latest channel at Geekville Radio, available at geekvilleradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or the podcasting device of your choice.
All right, we are back. Last segment of the show, we are talking X-Men 97, Episode 4. And kind of like the Bad Batch portion, this was like two episodes just crammed into one. And it seemed a little weird. It's not really uncommon in comics, especially with special edition issues, that you get multiple stories in one issue. I'm not sure why they did it that way here, because this could have just been one story that just jumped between locations. But it's hardly something to complain about. Maybe they're just trying out a new format. I don't know if we'll see this in the future or not, but the first half, Jubilee and Sunspot, took center stage. It was basically a love letter to 16-bit gaming. We know Mojo's back. Mojo turned Mojo World into a video game world. Looked like every side-scroller were ever played on the Super NES back in the day, even though the system was called Motendo, kind of like a juxtaposition of Mojo and Nintendo, and the system looked like a Sega Genesis, not a Nintendo. That's like a whole double tangent I'm going off on now. Double-digit tangent. But in 1997, I think the Nintendo 64 and the original PlayStation would have been the top gaming systems. But still, it was cool to see that Jubilee was still able to figure out the game pattern fighting this game version of Magneto, and that there were still the patterns you could figure out and do the run, the jump, and the duck, and all that stuff. But the heart of the story, I think, was Jubilee meeting the older version of herself. And again, that's another trope that's as old as sci-fi itself. And really showing that, yeah, she's 18, she's a woman now, she's probably going to have to mature and take a lot of changes, figuratively spread her wings, blah, blah, blah. We'll probably get a Jubilee Sunspot romance. But much like that double episode of Bad Batch, this is two episode stories. One was primarily action. In this case, it was the first one. Second story was mainly dialogue and character building with a life death part one. Although this one, there really was no real adversary in it until the last few seconds. We'll get to that. But it was just bonding between Forge and Storm. They summarized a lot of the story from the comics into one episode here. My guess is so they could leave on the cliffhanger with the giant bird. But it is true in the comics, Forge did make the gun that took Storm's powers. Only in the comics he physically made it. It wasn't just he had ideas that the government then took to make this and that. I mean, he flat out made it. He forged it because his name's Forge. It's what he does. So they summarized that and brought out a lot in the last few seconds, the character that they called the Adversary, who is in the comics. The Adversary has taken many forms over the years, fought many different heroes. I think most recently it was in some of the characters in Daredevil, I want to say. But I think this is going to be kind of the B-level subsidiary sub-boss. You know, it's like if Mr. Sinister and or Apocalypse are the main villains, this is going to be your mid-level, which is a demon, so we'll probably get a lot of trippy stuff coming along soon. Again, stuff you probably wouldn't have been able to get away with on Saturday morning cartoons in the 1990s, because this is also around the same time that Inferno storyline that we talked about last week was adapted in the last episode. So I don't think it's going to take nearly as long as it did in the comics, probably a couple episodes at the most, and Storm will be back to her power-wielding ways, whether she'll keep the punk rock mohawk look or whether she'll go back to the silver suit that she's had for most of the series. That remains to be seen, but overall, I think I give this episode a B-. There was a lot to like. Like I said, it was just kind of funny that these came out on the same day, because in both cases, they were two episodes effectively woven together, one right after another. That just kind of seems odd that it all happened on the same day, but I guess fitting as well. But that's going to wrap up this episode here. Like I said, it's getting late. This is the time of WrestleMania. I've been doing a lot of shows, a lot of podcasts, not sleeping very much. Hopefully things will be getting back to normal next week. If this is your first time hearing us, of course, welcome. We hope you liked what you heard. You can find us at Geekville Radio or on social media at Geekville Radio on Facebook or on X/Twitter or Instagram. You can reply to the episodes that are posted on our site or all across social media. Let us know what we're doing well. You can find us on the podcast platform of your choosing. We're all over Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. You name it, wherever you find podcasts, you should be able to do a search for Geekville Radio. You'll find this show. You'll find Examining the Doctor, where we talk Doctor Who, Examining the Dead, where we talk horror, Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame. We have the Nostalgia Trip, and we got Classic Wrestling Memories, all sorts of different flavors of geekery for you to partake in and hopefully enjoy. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what we're doing well, let us know what we're not doing so well. The only thing I ask if you post a review is just be honest, because I am always looking for ways to improve any of these shows. So if you think there's stuff we suck at, let us know what we suck at. I'm all ears. So until next time, we're going to shut down the power here in the Geekville Radio Studios, and we're going to call it a night.
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.